Well, I mean, wire fraud, if all you lose is your free to play account, not the worst deal in the world, but
Play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
exactly. But look how much that travel was free right before I went to jail.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller. So, guys, we had a listener question. Travis, one of our listeners, sent us a question
And
about
two questions.
two questions. Yes, should I answer? Which one should I answer first, or which one should we ask first?
I think we should probably do them in order.
Okay, all right. I gotta find the order now.
Do you like the way that I made you do that work and figure it out?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
I had no idea which one is first and which one is second either, so you could have just made it up.
Well, so he asked about airline and airport quality when there's more competition at a particular airport, and do we see the quality of the airport and the services there increase as quality goes up? I think that's the general question you were asking, Travis, and if I misinterpreted that, just let us know. So what do you guys think? Is if there's more competition, is the services at the airport better?
I think it's the contrary.
You think so?
Really?
Yeah. I personally believe from an airport perspective, the airports get nicer the more of a fortress it is.
Interesting. How would you apply that to, say, Newark?
Terminal C is far better than A and B.
That's true. That's true.
Even with the OTG crap, it's always been a nicer terminal. I mean, you look at, I mean, anything, Chicago, look at Terminal 1 versus Terminal 2, or Terminal 3 versus Terminal 2.
Yeah. You
I mean,
have.
is that common use? So you're saying common use gates get shat on essentially versus,
Yeah, because when the airline owns a portion of it, they invest into it. Whereas if it's common use gates, why would they even? I mean, look at Vegas. It's an okay airport, but there's like very few amenities. It's all common use.
That's fair. I was thinking Los Angeles, but maybe that's, a different sort of take, or JFK, where depending on the terminal. Some stuff's common use, but a lot of it is direct investment. And so, right, LAX, you've got a ton of competition, arguably some of the best competition you're going to find. And some of the sections are actually decent. And the airlines, where they can sort of do invest, we've seen United's got their new club now, and there was some investment there that they're doing the renovations. Delta did a whole bunch of renovations and then abandoned that terminal so they could consolidate on the other side, and is going to basically do that all over again and invest a whole bunch more money over there. And even there, the common use stuff in TBIT's pretty nice if you're into bright, flashy shopping malls at an airport.
Right.
But it's got decent concessions, at least, I should say. So that's one where the competition, the competitive nature isn't a problem necessarily.
Well, I would also say like international terminals are different than domestic because the airports invest in international terminals because they want to attract more people and it's the first point of or last point of entry for people going in and out. So I think that's different than a domestic. But I mean, domestic, I think it's really driven by dominance. Because I mean, LAX is a great example, right? Prior to all the moves, was 2-3 like
It's a dump.
one, two, three
It still
versus
is.
it still is versus 5, 4, 5 or 7, 8, or look at 6, right? 6 was a great example. No one owned it, and it was always been pretty disastrous.
Even the Alaska Club there was relatively new,
Yeah.
relatively recent development. And that was just the club that was sort of improved, not everything else for a while. So.
So then let's take other examples. Let's take places that aren't hubs necessarily, right? So like Portland. I mean, I guess Portland's kind of a mini hub for Alaska, or
Thinking Austin.
Austin's a great
Austin,
example.
Texas.
They're both good airports. San Diego comes in as another it's a depending on the terminal.
Semi-Alaska hub, depending on what you're looking for.
Yeah. And depending on the terminal too. Like, I
But
mean,
that's true, right? But like, yeah, you're right. The new stuff at Alaska's, or excuse me, San Diego is pretty nice.
It's a decent terminal. Decent food options, nice seats. It's nice. Trying to think of other examples where the airport is shared. I'm thinking stuff like Raleigh-Durham. I mean, I guess that's kind of an American hub, but I think the new terminal's pretty swanky and
It's
clean and nice.
really more of a Delta hub now versus an American hub.
Yeah.
But
Let
again,
me put.
that investment was mostly common use stuff by the airport authority, not the individual airlines.
Right. Exactly. And that was because Southwest wanted all of the old terminals, so they built the new terminal and moved everyone over there. But I mean, there's stuff. I mean, San Diego for the longest time was a dump, right? Unless you were in that one new pier of T2. Even now, if you go to the old pier of T2, it's still pretty much a dump. Or if you're in T1.
Yeah, true. Very true.
At least there's no commuter shack anymore.
Right. They finally got rid of that,
which was a dump, but it was a super convenient dump.
Right. But the reality is, in the case of San Diego, they had to invest the money because there was no dominant carrier, so they were never going to do it.
Yeah, no one was going to step up and invest in the airport.
Yeah.
Orange County, not a bad airport. Even San Jose, not a bad airport. But that's all because they did all this investments in renovating and growing out the terminal. But they're still San Jose
arguably is because of the international attempts to draw international, right? I mean,
right.
But they've got the Frankfurt service now, and they've just added a Mexico flight, I think. So
yeah, and they've got Tokyo, they've got London, and they have a Hainan fly somewhere to China. But I mean, all great things. But as a feature perspective, there's still not a lot of features within the San Jose airport. Sure, there's a lot of light, but from a concession, from a food perspective, it's still very, very limited.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I guess then it comes down. I mean, I'm thinking like Atlanta. I mean, being a fortress hub for Delta, I don't find Atlanta all that great. I guess the new terminal's nice, but I find it crowded.
In which pier?
The new international.
So F.
Yeah,
F is nice. Pier.
But
I think that's
else,
nice, but yeah, I mean, if you're flying out of the T gates, it's kind of old and crappy. A and B, sort of the main Delta areas, have decent concessions and are a little nicer. They've got upgraded clubs now, but it's still, I think that's one where the physical space hasn't changed, and that was always a slightly narrow, slightly low-ceilinged airport with a ton of people in it.
Yeah. Yep.
What if we leave the United States and look international, like, I'm trying to think of some, foreign airports that we've been. I mean, Heathrow is clearly depends very much on the airline because of like the very different experiences. Three is way different than two or five.
Mm.
But I think that's international is very different, right? Because the airlines really don't own it. Everything is common use. Pretty much all the international airports that I can think of.
Well, Heathrow T2 certainly is, right? It's or at least close enough because all the Star carriers sort of share. But five is all BA with the smattering of Iberia mixed in. And I think there's one other they do some ground handling for, but
T3 is not. But I think the way it's structured, BAA controls even T5.
Yeah, they do. Cause there's the story of like the $1 million door for the first class lounge, right? For allowing the Concorde room access or first class lounge access without going through shopping. British Airways used to pay an exorbitant sum to the airport authority, basically as a makeup for the lost shopping potential.
I actually did not know that story.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it for the show notes. It's a pretty interesting one.
$1 million door.
I'm trying to think of other international airports that aren't hubs for someone. I know I'm thinking Hong Kong, that's Cathay. You've got Narita, that's ANA and JAL. Is there an international airport that's not I'm thinking major airport that's not
a hub. But even like Hong Kong, it is a Cathay hub, but it does a ton of business for the other airlines, and it's all a single terminal.
True.
And I'm actually not even sure how much of it's dedicated versus common use gates there. Like, I don't know if Cathay has dedicated gates. I feel like when I walk through, I sort of see a smattering of everybody else sort of mixed around all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think they have any dedicated gates.
And so that's one where it's, you know, clearly a good investment was made, but again, that's the airport authority.
Yep.
Singapore, Changi, how do we pronounce that?
I don't even know. Changi? I don't know.
There's a value proposition there, and a lot of it's common use gates still, or sort of semi-such. And there's really expensive, right? It's really nice.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I think really, I don't know if there's a huge difference. I think some of the quality, I would say at hubs sometimes, depends on how much the airline is invested in that hub. So I think of like, Denver for United. There's been some improvements recently, but it used to be kind of a crapshoot going there. Like there'd be like parts of the airport that weren't even open, like in the United terminal. Like they'd just have restaurants that had been closed and weren't going to put anything in new. And I'm pretty sure United kind of controls some of that, right?
I mean, they leased the entire pier. I don't know if they control the concession space.
Mm. Because that was something that struck me. Or like Dulles. Like the experience at Dulles is just absolute crap. Right?
Right. I'm going to skip back to the other one for a minute. The idea of the who owns the retail space and how that all works, it really does come down to the lease details.
Yeah.
I know there's another air terminal where the airline has a full terminal lease and actually gets a cut of the profits as part of the concessions lease. Right, so the airline takes the full from the authorities and then releases some of the space out for concessions. And generally speaking, part of the contracts with concessions at airports is that some of the profits go back to the leaseholder. In this case, the airline keeps some of them rather than the airport, because the airline controls who moves in and when and where. I've got some links for the BA thing. Apparently, the Millionaire's Door has officially never been confirmed by British Airways, despite being asked. So it may just be an urban myth that it costs £1 million a year for this door to exist, but that's the story. And it's £1 million, not dollars, because it's in Heathrow.
So then let's move on to Dulles then. Like, the experience at Dulles is just terrible.
Right.
And then you contrast that with, say, Reagan.
Where the other half of, or the other half of Dulles.
Or
The AB experience is great. It's the CD that sucks.
Yeah, yeah. And that's United's gate.
Versus everybody else.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just terrible. And it's like, well, they have the ability to go in there and make some changes, right? I mean, I would think.
The problem there.
Some new concessions, though. So they have fixed it a little bit.
Yeah, the problem they have with Dulles is that the Washington Metropolitan Airports Authority basically wants United to pay for the new building rather than put the new building up.
Yeah.
And that's the real challenge. And I mean, I don't think an airline should have to build the terminal. I think personally, I think that might be a little too much. And that's the thing. If you look at all these other things, the building is provided and they build around the building they have. They might extend it. They might make modifications, but they don't put up a whole new terminal.
Yeah. Yeah.
JFK T5, JetBlue essentially designed it. The Port Authority built it, right, in conjunction with JetBlue, but that's a counterexample.
But in that case, the Port Authority still built it. JetBlue, I mean, it's one thing to help design it, but who saddled the cost? It was probably the Port Authority saddled the cost with guaranteed lease for X amount of time.
Yeah. So, I mean, right, that's, I guess you're talking about the upfront capital expense.
Yeah.
Versus lease over time. That's
right.
Okay. That's it. Because there's other places. I mean, there's plenty of places where an airline has basically worked with the airport authority to explicitly design what it will look like and came to an agreement on what the terms of the lease will be and did it. It's just a matter of whether the airport takes out a bond to finance it, knowing that the airline should be paying them back or other things, right? I guess that's like even like the Cleveland Terminal D, right? United's still paying off that lease that's covering the city bond, even though they don't fly there anymore.
The mothball building.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I'll round it out with like another example, like Detroit, right? The Delta terminal at Detroit, the main terminal, is super nice. It's great.
Yeah.
You go to the old terminal, and it's okay. But there's not a lot of concessions. It's kind of, a little rundown. Not amazing. So it's an interesting conundrum in who's invested in what and where. But the airlines, I think, like Houston, you're seeing this huge growth from United as far as building new terminals and redesigning things, which is being done with the city of Houston to kind of relieve some of the congestion there with international flights. And they're improving the airport. But then you go somewhere like, trying to think of another example, like DFW, where just the general airport design is so locked in. I'm not sure there's not a lot of improvement that can be made there, right?
I mean, they're with all the renovations at DFW, they're redoing a lot, right? They're extending out some of the building out the terminals a little more towards the taxiways. And then, they did the whole thing a number of years ago for the train where they built out these extensions to accommodate all the stuff above it.
Yeah, that's true. I just think, like, they're kind of locked in that U shape, the horseshoe shape.
They are, but they at least have space.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to Texas.
Exactly.
Travis's other question was for me specifically. He asked how I actually got home from London. We had talked about that a few episodes ago. So Travis, I ended up just sticking with the original flight that I had, which was London Heathrow to Salt Lake City and then Salt Lake City to Portland. Yeah, because I'm very uninteresting.
But you said the one little bit of follow-up is you had the bulkhead on that 767 with Delta as opposed to something further back and said it was a little better.
Yeah. You know, the bulkhead seat I thought had a little bit more room and a little more space so I could actually roll over when I was sleeping. And that was nice. And I kind of liked the fact that there was no one really in front of me and it was surprisingly quiet with the galley in front of you, like the bathroom in the galley. I'd never really heard people in either situation. So I liked... I actually, if I was going to fly the 763s again, I would go for the bulkheads.
All right. Useful.
Yeah. Let's see. Seth, you sent me a story. Iran is going to get 10 new airlines in the next 6 months.
That's the theory.
This is incredible.
That's the theory. So we've talked a little bit about Iran just and their sort of shopping spree for airplanes, and they've been signing up Airbus, ATR, and Boeing contracts. Airbus deliveries have already started. I think even the ATR deliveries started. Boeing deliveries have not. And I think there's some healthy skepticism as to whether they ever will based on political climate and such. But one of the big questions is, what are they going to do with all these planes? And yes, the old airline operations have these old planes for Iran Air and whatever that need to be retired. And the Airbus will help fill that in. But apparently... the Transportation Authority wants to sort of jumpstart the aviation community there. And so I think the minimum capitalization is like $90 million, which seems pretty light to start an airline.
Yeah.
But if you can prove you have the funds and you're willing to show up and sort of build out an airline, they want to issue a bunch of operating certificates very quickly to build competition and help connect, the various cities within the country and get things up and running. Some of them will be charter only, according to the story. So we're not going to have like 10 different commercial services suddenly running. But there's already a little bit of competition in the Iranian air market. But this, assuming it comes to pass, would be much more significant.
So you guys want to pack up and move to Iran and start an airline?
No.
Oh, I mean,
do you have $90 million that you haven't been telling us about?
No, we could get some investors.
Where we're starting.
We could start a Patreon for this and, maybe we might get some listeners to help finance our, what would we call it? Foz Air. I like it. I love it, actually.
Great. Perfect. How could I say no?
And it's all Airbus.
Dare I ask? Yeah, dare I ask, what would you call the loyalty program?
Pet Pass
One Plus.
One Pass. You're done. You're fired.
We would have one tier, and no elite benefits. So
you have a tier, but no benefits for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Sweet.
Well,
definitely want to get that status. Legitimately true wallet candy. I like it.
Exactly. Like we create like a really cool looking card. But there's no benefits, so.
Basically like being elite in China.
Yeah. It's interesting that they want to have so many airlines. I think it's a big country, but is there that much demand internationally and domestically for there to be competition that works between 10 airlines?
Well, I mean, assuming that they want some of those, assume 50% on a charter, right? If that's what they're saying. I mean, it depends, right? If each airline is one or two planes, there's probably not – I mean, it's a physically, geographically large country, so you could do a couple different routes per airline.
Yeah.
I don't know. With a population of just under 80 million, and even if everybody's flying, like compared to the U.S. population and the number of – we have fewer real commercial airlines than that, I feel. Like I know it's not quite, but it feels like it sometimes.
Yeah.
So – and ours are way bigger. But, yes, if they all were small and like – you did the China thing where like one person got Shiraz as a hub and one person got, pick other cities, pick everybody gets a different hub kind of thing and build up like the Chinese airlines have. And eventually you have some overlap in competition maybe, but I'm not sure how managed they want it to be versus, hey, here's some airspace, go fly around and like try to make money.
Yeah, it's true. Interesting stuff. Well, I mean, it'll be fun to watch to see, kind of what comes out of this since there's already these planes kind of on order and they're really encouraging people to come in and start an airline. Maybe Branson makes a move for it. Who knows?
He has been keen on starting airlines in the past.
Yep. Or what's the guy who started Azul and JetBlue?
Dave Neilman?
Yeah, I mean, I could see him doing something like that too, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to try to bring the Mormon missions into Iran as part of that.
Oh, man. You really went there, didn't you, Seth?
Salt Lake City call center for, I don't know how you say blue in Farsi. But, right? I mean, clearly that would have to be the name.
That's true.
He's got a pattern here.
He does. Speaking about, I'm just trying to get off the subject.
Please save us all.
So we were talking about competition at airports and how nice they are. But something that has come up recently is China Airlines is saying that they may actually drop JFK Taipei because they say it's losing money. And they posted this on – it was the international, I guess the Chinese or Taiwanese Yahoo site. And they were saying that they're just losing money on their New York routes, and they would rather just use their cooperation agreement with Delta to share that load. What do you guys think?
It's interesting. I mean, they said they lost $10 million on the route in the first 4 months of this year, and that's including holiday seasons. Right, Chinese New Year is typically a ton of people traveling, high loads, high fares in some cases. Although, in my experience, it's high loads, low fares it depends on the day.
Yeah.
Right. There's a huge rush of people trying to get home and then trying to get back, and then like in the middle, there's this lull where nothing happens and planes fly empty. So who knows? But I'm not that surprised that the route is not profitable. I guess there's also a ton more competition from mainland China.
Mm.
So if you're talking about, you get some O&D traffic for that, they have to compete with Ava. And then for everybody else that's connecting onward, you used to have, we've got plenty of competition going through, whether it's Tokyo or Hong Kong or wherever else. And there's now you add on mainland China competition on top of that for people that were connecting and now can get nonstops to mainland China. Like it's...
Mm-hmm.
The Trans-Pacific market right now is a hard place to make a lot of money, it seems to
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
And the story also, and again, with weird translation from whichever Chinese dialect it is, I'm not sure we're getting the full story, but it said something about the flight attendants really don't like working with just a 48-hour mm-hmm. turn in, mm-hmm. and some of them were either, and apparently they have a New York base,
I guess so.
Or they wanted a New York base or something like that. So there's some weird challenges in that sense as well, and there's maybe because it's an ultra long haul flight, a different pay scale that kicked in recently that's further increased costs that they can't really recoup very well. So that could be in between them, finding they're not making any money on that route, and Alitalia just not making any money in general. JFK could, and I think they're, aren't both of those at T1?
I think so, yeah.
I think China Airlines is a T1, so Terminal 1 may have a little extra space coming up soon.
Maybe Lefty can finally move Swiss over there.
Do you think they didn't move him over because of space?
I mean, possibly.
Yeah.
The timing of the flights is in the prime time, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing, is like the China Airlines flights certainly aren't, although if you could get the Alitalia slots, /gate slots, times, whatever, that would be okay for the Swiss flights. The China Airlines one wouldn't help.
Right.
So...
We'll have to see.
That's a 1:30 a.m. departure. No one's flying to Europe at that point.
Yeah,
be a cool time to leave for Europe, though.
Land at 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the West Coast flights land around that time.
Yeah, by necessity, though, right? I mean, I don't know. I like the 11 o'clock to midnight departure bank. I'm not sure the 1 to 2 a.m. departure bank has quite the same appeal.
Too late for you? Is that what it is?
It would be too late for me, yeah.
Yeah. I think we have two more stories. United had some award changes. They actually announced these changes the day we released the last episode. So we're catching up. Generally, some reward increases, some price increases for both partner awards and for United Saver Awards. And then what else is going on, Seth? There was a change in... domestic stuff?
They increased most of the Anytime Awards, and they've changed the name from Standard to Whenever,
mm-hmm.
I think, but whatever. So we've changed the name again, so yay branding. Something else I'm going to have to remember a new name for that I don't really care about.
There's a good name for an award, the Whatever Award.
Yeah, whatever. Just get on a plane and go. Get out of my way. That actually kind of could be fun. show up at any gate, like, do you have space available? Yes, I'm taking a seat. Let's go. Whatever. Right? There's a risk there. You know, maybe, like, expires on one day, and if you don't use it, you lose it. And you end up, like, at the end of the, like, so you get a discount depending on what you're willing to take a risk on. And, like, this flight sold out. Okay, I can try again until I run out. And then at the end of the day, I'm, like, sleeping on the airport at Newark because I didn't get anywhere.
It's like a buddy pass.
It's basically like an employee. Most of the Whenever Awards went up in price, some of them significantly. Hawaii saw – most of the Saver domestic stayed the same as far as I know. I don't think anything changed. Actually, most of the Saver sort of across the board stayed the same.
That's not true. The Transcon in Hawaii went up.
Even at Saver levels?
I thought
– I knew they went up at Whenever levels. And I know the Transcons maybe went up because there's the flatbed guarantee sort of thing, and so they were trying to bring that back as sort of an F, even though they don't really sell domestic F.
Yeah, because they went from 25,000 to 35,000.
Yeah, that's shitty. Each way. Yeah, don't do that. I don't think it's worth that premium.
No.
But, okay, so there's a couple small domestic changes, all increases where it happened. They also announced that they made an extra 11% of seats. You know, they increased award space by 11% for Saver domestically or something like that, which is one of those, like, who the hell knows how to counter and track that and, you know. Airlines are fun with numbers, so I guess we can believe them, but maybe not. Where it gets nasty is on some of the sweet spots disappeared. So I think it was at South Asia to Australia in first class used to be 40,000 points, and now it's 65 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like your typical Hong Kong, Bangkok, Sydney on Thai first for 40,000 points was a bargain. And now it's less of a bargain, but still not egregious, in my opinion. It's more expensive than some airline, some partner, or some, you know, other programs, less expensive than others. It's back in the, like, mid-range, not best opportunity out there. And the other thing they added is cheaper award options within Europe on sub-800-mile trips. So sort of like in the U.S., you get the discounted domestic runs for flights that are under, I think, 1,000 miles or 700 miles. 700, because it's just short of Chicago, New York. You get a discount on those off the standard, off the normal Saver rate. This is actually partner Saver rate discount, which is kind of interesting to me, just in the sense that they're doing that at all with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that you typically would see an airline do, right? Different rates for, I guess, it's not something United has typically done. Avios always had the different rates depending on distance, regardless of partner or not. But for people who are keen to fly a Norwegian or other low-cost carrier to Europe and do an open jaw on that end and then take advantage of some of the fun options with Lufthansa Group, certainly in significant Saver coach award space within Europe as a cheap way to sort of bounce around for some of those connections, not a bad way to go.
You know, I will say anecdotally that I have noticed domestic availability is more readily available out of Portland, which is something I've struggled to find before. And I don't know if that's because it's a holiday week this week, but I was looking last week and the week before for some flights down to San Francisco and to some other places and had no problem finding domestic coach reward space. Couldn't find a lot of domestic first reward space. Which on a 2-hour flight, I don't really care, but transcons, I don't really expect to ever find it. So
set your expectations sufficiently low that, like, not beating you makes you happy?
Yeah, I think, well, for me, like, the international stuff is what I really care about, and what has usually held me up is I have to buy a ticket to, like, L.A. or San Francisco or Chicago because there's no reward space. But there's reward space out of those cities internationally.
Yeah.
And that's,
so now being able to at least get to the gateway, even if it's only in coach, is
it's better than
an
nothing
for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Other thing I just considered, with those sort of short hops being discounted now, can we call that a devaluation of the excursionist benefit? Because, yeah, I used to get a 15,000-point segment for free, and now it's only a 10,000 thing that I get for free. Or is that just me being a complete jerk?
You're kind of being a jerk, but I mean, I see what you're coming.
I know. I am trying to be a complete jerk. I'm thinking of, like, can I post this on Flyer Talk and really rile them all up? Because it's the same thing that you're getting for free either way.
Yep.
Does the fact that they've changed the number on the price change the value of it?
Yep.
You can always make that claim and then rile, launch the grenade and walk away.
Yeah.
Sounds like a blog post.
Dun, dun, dun.
I mean, actually, I haven't even written about this at all, I don't think. It's just not, like, I don't know. It's one of those things they announced the change. And actually, I give United credit. They threw some serious shade in the, we've updated our award charts comment, mm-hmm. you know, clearly show, you know, about Delta. Oh, the other thing that's sort of part of this, even though it's an award chart, the Anytime Awards now are theoretically dynamic pricing.
Mm.
So the price you see is the top cost you'll pay, but it may be less than that. And I haven't done enough research. I think, I mean, the changes don't go into effect until November 1st, so we can't really tell until then. But in theory, that's the absolute most it'll cost, but there's a good chance in some cases it will be less than that still.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's a devaluation in the grand scheme of things. Awards got more expensive in a lot of places and not cheaper in sufficiently enough places to offset that. As devaluations go, it's not the worst we've seen. It's probably not the worst we'll see this year. So it's hard to get too worked up for me.
I will at least give them credit that they gave adequate notice.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could have definitely pulled a Delta and just not, you know, said, oh, this is happening tomorrow.
Yeah.
I don't think Delta even said it. I think Delta just did it. And I was like, oh, what? Something changed? Huh, interesting. Good luck with that.
Oh,
we didn't notice over here.
Last story. Boeing 737 MAX was delivered to Norwegian this past week. Kind of.
Yes.
Second, it's the second carrier, right, to have it?
Yep. And then it was delayed a couple times, but they finally got theirs. They took two of them the same day, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you know, the ferry flights home, so sort of wingtip flights, just trailed each other right across the top of Canada, Greenland, and over at Oslo, which is neat. But, yeah, I know we had a couple friends who were on. They did a sort of charity auction to open up space on one of the delivery flights and hang out with the CEO and whatnot. And Ed Pizzarello, Pizza Motion, who's been on a couple times the show, he was on it. He got in on that. So see if we can give him a ring and see if he wants to chat about this maybe on one of the future episodes. I know it's his first delivery flight also. It could be fun.
Yeah.
But yes, there are now two 737 MAX operators in the world. And at some point in the near future, the Norwegian ones will start flying to Providence or Stewart, Newburgh, New York, Providence, Rhode Island. Those are their transatlantic gateways for the 737s. So, you know, they've bet big on that as a market, mm-hmm. and remains to be seen how well they do. But now that at least they're starting to take the planes that they can do it with more efficiently.
When are you booked on that, Seth?
I'm not yet. I need to. I know. No, part of it was, right, this is why I came home early last week. I was going to do the Cork or the to Providence or the Belfast to Providence inaugural. But, A, I was tired and wanted to come home. And, B, I didn't want to do it just on a 738. I wanted the MAX.
Yeah.
So once they're on the schedule for real, and I really don't want to do it eastbound, so I need to figure out a time that I've got one of my random open Europe tickets that I can get over there,
yeah,
and then fly one of these home.
Yeah.
And I'm running out of open tickets to Europe, so that may prove challenging.
Everyone should have some spares.
Yeah, I feel like you a little bit. I'm sorry, Fuzz. We used to have these conversations all the time, and you'd be like, oh, I've got this extra half ticket to here and this extra ticket to there. I'm like, how the hell does this sort of thing happen? I don't know what he's doing. He's crazy. And I didn't say it. I just sort of thought it and let it go because it seemed to be working for you. And I'm like, I don't know how he keeps track of all of them. And it turns out you didn't because you'd be talking at some point and be like, yeah, I have these other three tickets that are all expiring. I got to figure out how to reuse. Like, and now all of a sudden I'm in that same position and I'm like, oh, this is how it happens. You just start once and it snowballs from there.
And before me, it was our producer.
That's true. That's
He's
true.
The original.
He had a whole bunch of them. Now I think I'm down to only one remaining ticket back to Europe that I'm sitting on. And of course I have to make a change to it. So that'll be annoying, but, maybe may prove that booking with a travel agent rather than direct with Iberia becomes useful. Because I can call the travel agent to handle the change instead of having to deal with the Iberia call center.
Yeah, that might actually be worth it.
I mean, it cost me the same. I didn't hurt me at all, and the guy's my friend, so that helps also. But, you know, I think that actually will prove to be very beneficial to me. But anyways, yes, I'm running out of European returns, and I really don't want to fly the MAX in a 30-inch slimline seat in coach across the Atlantic, so on a red eye.
Yeah, you'd rather do
it. If I did it, I'd basically have to convince myself it was okay to stay awake the whole time and just collapse when I got there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not my idea of a great way to do a Europe trip. So,
yeah. Any other comments on this? Any other comments on any other stories? No.
I am a little. I mean, it's hard for me to say I'm really excited about the Max. I'm a little excited about it, though. I know everybody sort of poo-poos it, like it's 60-year-old blah blah blah, you know, technology and this and that. You know, it's in the same way that the A320 Neo is what 40-year-old technology. I mean, it's yes, it's an old fuselage shape, but in some ways, like that's part of what makes it amazing is that they've maintained enough commonality over the decades to continue to innovate and make something work and work more efficiently without having to do a major redesign. It's kind of neat to me.
Yeah, yeah. Getting more efficiency and more people is a nice thing, right?
Yeah, I mean...
What are people expecting, right? Because being able to reuse those designs also helps keep fares down.
Yeah, I mean, it saves... And the assembly stuff, right? I mean, one of the challenges... Someone was talking about going even longer on the 737 fuselage, and could you do it with a new wing and maybe some revised landing gear and, you know, upgrade the engines and this and that as a replacement, sort of 757 replacement? Because even the... sort of the Dash 10, and we talked about this last week, isn't a real replacement for the 752, certainly for the transatlantic stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the challenges with that is, like, if you try to go larger diameter to, like, put a little extra space for passengers or go too much longer, potentially challenges with the transportation of the fuselage sections from, was it Kansas?
Yeah, Wichita.
Wichita, right? The fuselage sections all come in on trains.
Mm.
Like, I have to assume that there's, you know, they've got the route that they take and this and that, but like there's tunnels, I imagine, along the way. How much bigger can you get before you hit the tunnel walls and things like that, that make it an interesting, it would make for an interesting challenge if they tried to do too much different along the way, to say nothing of all the retooling and all the other engineering costs that go with changing some of that stuff. It's a, I don't know, it's interesting to me that like, along with the sort of what did you expect? Like I expect it to be better, but for what definition of better and what am I willing to pay for it? And
yeah.
I started paying a little more for plane tickets to get premium economy on long haul now, but I'm still pretty much a cheap jackass. So I'm not really willing to pay for it most of the time.
Well, guys, I think that's an episode.
Okay, we're going to finish with I'm a cheap jackass. I think that's a solid play.
I think so. I mean, what else can be said? You can follow us on Twitter at dotslines, more dots, more lines.com. Leave us a comment. You can leave questions. We love answering questions. Leave us a comment.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
Well, we remember to. It's not that we don't like answering, but sometimes we forget to.
Yeah. Yeah, but thanks for listening. And until next time, happy travels. Bye, guys.
Take care.
See ya.